We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What do you think about the Laker team now?
You follow the box scores, the games every day.
Just the Lakers.
You're kidding. That is really a compliment. I was pleased to see you smile at the top of our show, because once the game starts, you have a game face. You don't smile much out there.
I don't think you have to do things for money anymore.
Correct.
What's up, Laker fans? Welcome to the Laker Film Room Podcast, brought to you by the Blue Wire Podcast Network. I'm Pete, joined by Mike, no Darius today. And we're recording this in the morning, so we have a trio of games tonight on Monday night, a couple of closeout games with the Celtics and Sixers, and then a great game five between Dallas and Utah that we're excited about. But we will not be talking about it because it has not happened yet, even though by the time the pod comes out, it will have happened. But what did happen last night, Mike, was the New Orleans Pelicans took it to the Phoenix Suns and tied up the series at four. Now we have ourselves a three-game series. And of all of the things that stand out to me about this series, the Pelicans being not afraid of them at all is right at the top. Tell me what you're seeing out of a kind of unexpected tight series that, I don't know, man, I think the Suns are in for it. They're going to have to win this series. It's not going to be easy over these last three games, and we weren't expecting that. What have you seen from that series, Mike?
This series is a bit of a microcosm of the whole playoffs in that it's just been really enjoyable, and the level of competition is extremely high.
Yeah.
Perhaps now, or this could be one of those where we save it for Darius, but Pete, you made a point, and we were discussing it in the thread, and maybe hit on it in one of the podcasts, but you were talking about the devaluation of the regular season, and I think that I pushed back some on that while ultimately agreeing, but the bottom line for me is that some of these players, particularly the stars, have clearly been trying to manage through the regular season. But guess what we're getting now? Like, now we're getting it all.
Yeah, right? It's great. It's so good.
So hopefully there's some middle ground there where the regular season doesn't get as devalued as maybe this regular season did. But if this is the payoff, there's a little bit of part of me where it's like, hey, let's chill out a little bit on what we're on evaluating the regular season too harshly, and then just try to enjoy some of this. So this series definitely represents some of what that is. And in terms of New Orleans, yeah, Riggs thinks so too. By the way, he just busted his way through double door locks to try to get to you.
He got to say hi to us, man. Like, yeah, it sounds like he got thwarted too.
My poor wife. Oh man, it's like, yeah, there were multiple screens set up there, and he just ran all of them over to try to get out here. And then
very impressive. That's playoff defense, Mike.
Yeah,
you got to fight through screens.
Yeah,
Riggs knows what's up.
He wanted to get to his buddy. So, all right. So I say all this to get to New Orleans, and they've got some dogs on that team in terms of competitors. And Brandon Ingram is like that. And I know that the way that some people perceived him in his Laker days, I always felt like was unfair, right? He was 18, 19, and since he was the number two pick, the world was expected of him. His three-point shot wasn't falling, in part because his legs weren't quite there yet, but his stroke, I always thought, was better. So, but he is ultimately still a real, just intense competitor. And now he's got some guys with him. So Herb Jones comes into that mix, is an absolute dog in that context. You've got Alvarado coming off the bench, just loving, like, in a like Chris Paul without any of the pedigree, but in terms of the competitive fire that he has. So he's out there playing like that. Najee Marshall, even he comes in for 10 minutes off the bench, like Trey Murphy the third. So all of these guys, with the exception of Alvarado, are also big and long. And yep.
Valanciunas, so, too. That's a big dude that plays hard, and he's a handful. Larry Nance, like, you could go down the line. They got a lot of those guys.
Yeah, Nance competes, and then that kind of allows McCollum to be able to do his skill stuff, right, in the midst of it. But they've only got one guy like that. Well, I shouldn't say that. It's Devontae Graham, too, right?
The Suns are also have several small guards, too, right? Between Chris Paul and Payne, and I feel like there's one other guy. But, Shamet. There you go.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's a good mix that way. And then what's unfair to Phoenix in some senses is, well, they're without – I know that Booker's called their best player. Now, I still think I would give the slight edge to Chris Paul as just the driver of that boat to an extent. But even if Booker may have surpassed him this year, but that is the reason why this series is tighter, right? This series is tied. It's because of Booker's injury, I think. I'm not saying it wouldn't have been
– Forgive me, Mike, for not wanting to hear from Phoenix about one of your top guys being out and that impacting a playoff series.
Yeah. So it's like all of this stuff is true. It's a great series. It's super competitive. Credit to New Orleans. But, you know, I don't think I had picked before the series started a gentleman sweep. I think a lot of people picked a sweep, but I thought New Orleans would pluck a game away, right? Just with their being a little better than people think and a nice rhythm. Their super team unity right now, right? All rowing in one direction. And have found a way to play a certain brand of basketball without Zion. And it's been impressive. So, yeah, I still think Phoenix wins the series, but I would be surprised if New Orleans didn't find a way to win one more game almost. Like, I think this series could absolutely go seven, and Phoenix is going to have to kind of go the distance like the Lakers had to often in that 2009 in 2010, those two championship runs where it's like, wait, why are they playing in game seven? And yeah, so I'm into that for sure, but I would still pick Phoenix.
I agree, but New Orleans has a great combination of having a physical advantage, not being scared of them at all. And I think they have some real intimate knowledge of how Phoenix goes about their business with Willie Green. He was an assistant for them last year. And I think that they're both tactically and in terms of personnel. There were so many interactions in that second half in particular where so much of Chris Paul's game, I think, is mental and trying to get an edge over his opponent, where he actually lost that. There was an interaction where B.I. was like, yo, you want to talk your shit? We can go back there and fight. And like, I've already punched you in the face once, right? And so B.I. is not going to be intimidated by Chris Paul. Jose Alvarado, Herb Jones was on the ground and Chris Paul comes by. I'm going to help you up. He's like, nah, I don't need your help up. I'm going to wait for my teammate to come by. And so I think that there's a mental edge in the playoffs and in a series especially that usually a one seed, even with injuries and things like that, usually a one seed has exerted by this point of the series. That I'm with you, Mike. I think the Pels get at least one more win. And I do think that they have a legit shot of winning the series. Where would you put, like, percentage-wise, what would you put the Pelicans' chances of winning this?
Right after I said what I said the previous little soliloquy there, I'm like, you know what, though? That Lakers team, I knew they were winning game seven, you know, right, when it got to there.
Yeah, do you feel confident about Phoenix?
No, not to the same degree. And here's part of the reason why. Because the Lakers, that team, they won most of their games by 20 points. You know, and then they just sort of did it. Powell and Lamar and Bynum were just like, we're good. You know, we don't have to. And that's not been the case with Phoenix in this series, right, with the last couple of games. So, like, they needed an all-time Chris Paul fourth quarter where he made either five or six straight shots, tough contested shots. And he can't do that every night. And the issue that they have without Booker, it's a little bit like what the Lakers had when AD went out, and we were kind of all thinking, well, maybe Kuzma can step up into this next primary, go get a bucket in at least somewhat of an efficient way. And their wings don't do that. Mikal Bridges is not quite there yet. Like, he's been good in terms of being on the floor a lot and playing defense and stuff, but he's not scaring New Orleans when he goes into some of his ISO stuff, which they've gone to a couple of times. Jay Crowder, no, not happening.
Right.
You know, when off the bench, they bring in, well, actually, so Cam Johnson's been starting, right? But same thing. Like, he's not really And whereas New Orleans, not only do you have Ingram, but you have McCollum, and you have either one of those guys that can carry that way. And you can even get a little bit more in the actual post from Valanciunas than Ayton, who's that play finisher. But you're not just going to give him the ball at the beginning of a possession and say, all right, go to work. And that to me is a real thing in this series. And that's where Booker would have made such a massive difference, because Chris Paul's out, no problem. Run the offense through Booker. Like, he'll get you into a good shot, either for himself by drawing attention or either for himself or by drawing attention for somebody else. And to me, that's something where I absolutely could see New Orleans winning the series. I just, if pressed to it, it's really hard to go against what you've seen all year and sort of give Phoenix some level of benefit of the doubt. But I am probably, like a lot of people watching this, enjoying New Orleans and sort of rooting just in a subconscious in a way. And it's just fun. I'm not usually like a big upset person where I watch the NCAA tournaments and I'm like, oh, I had those great Cinderella story.
Sure.
I'm not always like that, because but in this case, it's hard not to get wrapped into that 1-8, yeah, and be rooting for, and really 1-10, right?
Yeah.
This Pelicans team that had to go on the road twice to even qualify. So, yeah, man, I don't know what the percentage is for that, but I would say it's much closer to 55-45 or 60-40 than I was originally thinking.
Wow, I'm in the 30-35% range, so not quite to that level of confidence in the Pelicans, but I see it. I definitely see it.
By 60-40, I mean 60 Phoenix, 40 Pelicans. Sure. But yeah, so somewhere I'm somewhere between 35 and 40.
Let's take a break, and when we come back, I want to zero in on your point about shot creation and creating that advantage in the first place in the absence of Booker.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
With everyone fighting for attention, how can your business stand out and connect with customers? Easy, with Constant Contact. Constant Contact's award-winning marketplace platform has helped millions of small businesses stand out, stay top of mind, and see big results fast. It's okay if you don't know much about marketing. Constant Contact's writing assistant tools and automation features help you craft messaging and say the right things at the right time. I use this to help write and send my email newsletters, and you should too. So get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Just go to ConstantContact.com right now. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall. ConstantContact.com.
This is something that I think goes back to a lot of our conversations about the Lakers and how important is ball handling and shot creation and how much of it do you need? And we've talked over the years about the idea of there being three parts of any given play. You have the advantage creation, the advantage extension, and then the finishing, right? And sometimes the same player can do all three or two of them. But what you, the types of players you're talking about, Mike, a guy like Booker, defensively, I have to commit more than one player to him on the initial action. If I'm the defensive coach, right? If I'm coaching against him and I got Devin Booker coming off of a screen, it's like, I can't just lock and trail on him and have my big stay home, or he's going to just give me buckets all day. And so that right there, that's the advantage creation. I can't guard you one-on-one if I'm the opposing coach with just one of my guys. I got to put a little more in terms of the assets I have to use on you. which means I'm taking them away from somewhere else. And in that, that's where the advantage is created. And then that's where your players like Bridges can help extend that advantage. A player like Crowder, they have a lot of real professionals on the Suns that know their system well and can, you know, make the right pass, make the right cut. We've talked about this a lot this season, where they're really in the right spot a lot of the time. But in the absence of that, when you give the ball to a Bridges, when you give the ball to a Johnson, even a guy like Ayton, who I actually think has stepped into that role fairly well. It's just they haven't, I feel like they've kind of lost their third guy in a lot of ways because Ayton has had to step into that and Bridges has struggled from three. Payne has not been good in this series at all. And so that inability to create advantage, like to me though, this is point guard time, right? If you're the point guard, Mike, it's about creating open shots for your team. That's what I want to see from Chris Paul. He had 4 points. He had 11 assists in this game, but he played 35 minutes. You can't have 4 points in a game that Devin Booker doesn't play in. And yeah, he hit those shots at in that game one. He's also getting his hand checked, right? He didn't like, there's concerns about his hand and his ability to get shots up. So I think that factors into all of this. But to me, Mike, like, is this something against a big, long New Orleans team? Like, can Chris Paul do that against a team like this?
This is the problem with the Hall of Fame point guard that is amongst the best ever to do it. That happens when he doesn't have enough help. You know, I would even put James Harden into somewhat of a similar role. When you ask these guys to do too much of the shot creation, and not just for themselves as Chris Paul has to do, and Harden would do even a little bit more, but then also be the guy that's getting every other shot for a teammate, that is when the size that you put on him wears him down. And how could it not, right? How could it not over the course of a series? The one player who seemed to be able to find answers to that historically as a small guard was Isaiah Thomas. But what I don't know, and this is, I guess I'd have to have this conversation with like a Michael Thompson or somebody like that, is how much defenses at the time were just trapping and throwing two big wings. And I don't think it was as much, Pete. You watch those Showtime Lakers teams close. You know, more often than not, wouldn't they just sort of have the point guard defend the point guard?
Yes. And also that Detroit team was really good in that. And part of the reasons, one of the reasons I like Miami is that when a team kind of has a distributed offensive attack, Bill Laimbeer was a stretch five back when that didn't really exist that much. So they were great on defense. He had a running partner in Dumars where if they threw a lot of attention at Isaiah, Dumars could kick your ass too, and then Vinny Johnson off of the bench. And so like that, like I feel like you have to have a certain type of build and players around them. And then yes, the game is so different that in some ways it's apples to oranges in the first place.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, we're just like, so let's say if that Bulls team, and I don't think that they had, again, they had gotten to that point yet, they were still just pups, but all right, Jordan and Pippen. Like, yeah. That's who, you're not defending the two and the three, or like you're defending Dumars and Isaiah Thomas, and then we'll eventually give you some help from one of the bigs. Like if Chicago, of course, did eventually beat Detroit, and I would love to go back and kind of watch that, right? In thinking about it in this context, all right, well, how much did they just say, hey, Mike, like cut off that water? Let's not do that.
Let's do that this summer, Mike. Let's watch some games this summer.
We should do that. And so you think then about going back to this Chris Paul series, and without Booker, without that running mate, and Cameron Payne has been bad, you know, he's so off the bench. He's got, and he killed the Lakers last year after AD went down. It's like, he wasn't missing a shot. He's scoring at the rim. He's competing. So far, Pete, in their four games, he's shooting 29.6% from the field overall for 4.8 points and 1.3 assists. And that's in some decent minutes too. That's in, so 64 minutes played. It's about 16 per game, at least enough to be doing something. And, you know, Mikal Bridges shooting 22% from three, 47 overall, you know, 13 points. They're just not, Shamit, right? He's not played nearly as much, but has not been effective. They haven't had anybody else aside from Ayton, who a lot of his stuff is getting set up by Chris Paul. And this is, again, why. So going into the playoffs, I don't want to talk out of both sides of my mouth. I think by default, I sort of reluctantly picked Phoenix to win, but was trying to find ways to push back and be like, they're not this. So Zach Lowe had a couple of podcasts where he was talking about, they're 8 wins better than everybody else in the regular season. And I was kind of like, yes, but, you know, they did that by they had the fire from losing in the finals the previous season. They, for the most part, stayed very healthy. Yes, Booker missed a few games here and there. Yes, Paul ended up missing games late, but they are not this, they are not this powerhouse talent team, right? That has, they've got a lot, they've got a perfect build of, if we stay healthy, Paul and Booker plus these bigger wings that just do 3-and-D stuff, you know, somewhat similar to the Lakers, except the difference making between the Lakers when their two stars could also kill you on defense in LeBron and AD.
And they're big.
And they're big, but so they can go get buckets in the way that Phoenix can, but they, all of the role players supporting that didn't have to do. So that's the whole thing with Phoenix. And I'm at the point where very quickly last week, I said, once the Booker thing happened, I was like, all right, Golden State now. Like that, to me, that's the team to pick out of the West. And I'm still there right now having, well, I think they're going to gentlemen. I heard you guys talking about the Nuggets game in Golden State, but I think we all think that's a gentleman sweep. Like Golden State goes home, takes care of business. And the team that I'm curious about now. So let's say that Phoenix does find a way to get past New Orleans. Well, Luka looked pretty good in game one. You know, of his game one, like of game four, but game one of that series, and Dallas lost, but barely.
But he also, like, Brunson had a good thing going as well versus Utah, and there's a degree of desperation, right? Like, if Utah loses that game, that series is probably over. So I do think that there's some degree of context there where Luka did look good on an individual basis, but I do think that they have some degree of, like, your turn, my turn to work out, and that's not always easy.
Maybe, but they played pretty effectively since the Dinwiddie trade with Brunson starting next to Luka then Dinwiddie coming in. And so I still think that they here's the point that I meant about Luka coming back, though. Like, Dallas to me is good enough to give Phoenix real problems, and especially if Booker isn't back then. And I might, the way that both teams are playing right now, right? And we'll see, like, they still have to integrate Luka. They've got the game five at home. But the point is, it's interesting and it's open now to a greater degree, even than some thought going into it. And I'm sure there are some real nervous folks in Phoenix, not just about that game five, which all of a sudden is the pivotal pressure game. And I think, I think typically that's the one, Pete, I've seen that Laker home crowd lift. Game five is the game where the home crowd is at a fever pitch. And really, because it's a must win, but it's in your building. And if you win it and the series is tight, then you know that you get to come back for game seven if you can't win game six. And that's to me, that is enough of a tiebreaker, really, in this series where that's, again, while I will be picking Phoenix. But, man, it's going to be New Orleans has acquitted themselves quite nicely, and it's going to be real fun to watch.
Going to be a ton of fun. And the thing about those home crowds, I think it depends on what kind of history that team has. Like, Phoenix been bad for a long time. They ain't beat a team that had both their guys in a playoff series since 2010. And have somehow managed to have as many parades as we have in that time, despite the fact that we won two titles in that period. So if things go a little, like, New Orleans isn't going to be intimidated by Phoenix. And if things start going a little bit sideways, I think those types of crowds also have a little bit of, uh-oh, here we go, nervous energy, you know, where
get a little tight.
A little tight, exactly. And New Orleans is going to have to, I think, survive that first wave. But I'm fascinated to see the direction that this series goes in. And one final point before the last segment, with small guards, I think we've seen this be a difficult first round for Trae Young and Ja Morant as well. I think that it's a theme that we've seen around the league, right, is that it gets tough for smaller guards in these playoffs.
Absolutely. And not completely related, but you made a point that I wanted to just get your quick 30-second to a minute on your last pod with Darius. You had said that Golden State for you, not quite convinced. I'm just curious why.
So I think Denver is Jokic and duct tape. You know, like, Jokic has really put a bad team on his back. They just don't have guys, and Jokic is, like, the way that Golden State plays into Jokic's biggest weakness, which is his mobility on the perimeter. And, like, no player is everything, but this is something that against Golden State in particular, you have to be able to switch against Golden State. And so I want to see them against a team that's capable of doing that. I don't think, like, I think they have a pretty easy path to the conference finals. So I don't think that this is really going to manifest for them until then, but part of that is informed by watching Laker games. I think they're vulnerable to athletic size as well. And so a team that can kind of physically push them around a bit. I'm just not sure that team is out there in the West. Hell, the Pelicans might be the most physical team left in the West at this point. That's kind of where I'm saying.
But that's why I think they're coming out of the West, though. You know,
sure.
Like they're So they're, and then all of a sudden, you know, who's in the East? That's, well, the team that's got physical size that would be tough for Golden State to handle is Boston.
Well, and Milwaukee. Right.
In Milwaukee, yes. But I'll spare you. Well, let's spare you Celtics talk for now, as they're about to sweep the Nets.
Yes, we will have plenty of time to discuss. I can't wait for that second round series between Boston and Milwaukee. Let's take a break. When we come back, we're going to introduce a new segment.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. In hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So this is something that we're going to be doing, I think, gradually over the course of the offseason and hopefully to the right degree. It's funny. One of the things I always laugh about, I do this, Darius does this. A lot of times when we're trying to transition to you, Mike, on the show, trying to kick it to you, we will preface it with the, Mike, you know, you were there. You're on the ground. You have a different perspective. We do this all the time. And I think it's incredibly cool to have Mike's perspective. And he's been there for a lot of classic Lakers moments since. Mike, what was your first year? The 2008 season?
Yeah, 08-09.
08-09. So that's where we're going to start. We're going to have a new segment that we're going to call True Stories, where Mike tells us his kind of on-the-ground perspective of an event in Lakers history, maybe a person. We'll see what direction this goes in over time. But this is going to be our first True Story, and it's going to be the night of Game 5 of the 2009 Finals. The Lakers are in Orlando. They are up 3-1 and on the verge of their first title since 2002 and the first Shaqless Kobe title. So Mike, you guys are in Orlando. I'm at the Yard House in downtown LA, right across the street from Staples Center, so that if the Lakers win, I can go party in the streets in downtown, which they ended up doing. But as we always say, Mike, you were there. You're on the ground. Tell us the story of Game 5, the 2009 NBA Finals.
Well, the preface of it is the Lakers, of course, they win Game 1 in a blowout, right? 100-75. Game 2, they're in control for much of it. Orlando does have that like potential tip-in chance late in the game. Lakers end up winning by 5, though. Like Courtney Lee, I believe, nonetheless. Yep. And you get to Orlando, and I had that entire season. Like, I was coming in new from the Minnesota Timberwolves the prior season. They won, like, I don't know, 16 games or 20 games or something like that. And as I've said to you before, I was convinced that the Lakers were going to win the title based off of seeing the finals the previous year against Boston and knowing that Bynum and Ariza were going to come back, and then just being around the mindset of that team in the end of training camp. And I was like, oh, okay. Yeah. This is just happening. This, not only is this team physically gifted like this, but the attitude that Kobe was instilling on everybody. And he had had the offseason to kind of get Pau's attention really and get him on board with that. And so I thought this was destined to happen. And so they win those first two games, and you're going to Orlando on that flight. And it was like, yeah, you know, they're, now I didn't know they were going to take care of business in, for sure in terms of, but it was 2-3-2 still at the time. So the absolute worst case scenario right there to me was like, you come back up 3-2, like I said, it would have been up 3-2 and just have to close it out. And like, there's no way they're not winning at least one of these three games in Orlando. Yeah. And probably they're going to win two and close out the series. So game three happens and Orlando wins a tight one. The Lakers don't play their best ball. But then game four is the Derek Fisher 3-point shot over Jameer Nelson, the Kobe transition pass to Powell, the ridiculous pass that Powell finishes, and then getting to overtime, another Fisher three. And then game five, right, they win pretty easily. 99-86 ends up being the final. So the way that it works, and I didn't know this yet at the time, but we were staying in a hotel that was about, I don't know, maybe 20 miles outside of the city and like a nice resort, big open space. And I think that usually we'll stay right in downtown Orlando, but it would have been just a chaos there. And so especially from the player's standpoint, they want to have a little bit of space. And all right, you can go back sort of to a home base when you're going to be staying in a city that long. And what this ends up doing, though, Pete, is so after we win the title, it really thins the people that are there to celebrate it. And for me, being lucky enough to be there, this is great, right? Whereas opposed to when you're the Lakers win the next year at home and I'm just scrambling between the locker room, like trying to write stuff. And all of a sudden, like, where's everybody going? And there's this post game thing happening there and everybody sort of splits, right? You've got all the families, all the friends, but in Orlando, being there that night, you know, it's basically just the players' families and the staff. And then a couple of people that, you know, from the NBA, a couple of people kind of filtering in. But so I'm sitting there, get back to the hotel after covering the game. And they're like, all right, everybody, there's a party down in boardroom X, you know, and it's like, okay, well, this is going to be awesome. Right. Again, it's sure. First year. And so immediately there's Kobe and his family. And of course, now it's incredibly difficult and sad to think about that aspect of it. But like, so I'm watching, you know, Kobe holding his finals MVP trophy with Vanessa. And at the time, just Natalia and Gianna are there. And like, Kobe's holding one, Vanessa's holding the other. And one's got the finals MVP trophy. The other one's got the actual trophy. And like, wow. Andy Bernstein's there taking trophies. Then Lamar comes in with his crew and starts to take pictures, right? Then all of a sudden, here's Josh Powell with a bottle of champagne that he's pouring on people's heads. There's Jordan Farmar. There's Shannon Brown.
So this is back at that home base, at that hotel?
This is the hotel.
Okay, so you guys, if you don't mind, Mike, can we rewind to, there's that famous scene of, you know, right as the final seconds are expiring, you got Kobe jumping for joy in the final seconds and all of that. Tell me about that and then how you got to the hotel before you finish the story. Where were you when the Lakers were clinching that title?
Well, the reason why I think I skipped to the hotel and is because I was just feverishly trying to write. And at the time, like, tweet, and I was writing a post game story and then the running diary. So I was just like super locked in on covering that. So it was like, all right, well, here's what happened in the game. And then, okay, well, who's the finals MVP? But, you know, tweet, because we had just started Twitter then basically for that finals. So it was like, okay,
wow,
Kobe. And I'd have to go back now and look at what I was actually tweeting. But that was really more just observing and covering it like I would any game. And I wasn't like down in the court, you know, jumping around or anything. I was I was in full on journalist mode. So I don't have like a great story from that. I will say, though, that then getting into the locker room, that was then the first time that the champagne starts pouring everywhere. And
yeah,
so
like?
I wasn't there for that. I mean, that was like, it was awesome, right? It was the vindication for Kobe. It was all the other guys that had not won before aside from Fisher. And it was just this kind of, it was a realization of something that had started the previous year and had taken a lot from everybody. And so I think there's something a little bit more meaningful to, like, if Phoenix did have a chance to win this year, the fact that they lost the previous year, or when San Antonio lost to Miami and then came back in. If you avenge something that's been in your heart and weighing on you for that long, it inevitably has that release of emotion, I think, that's even greater than just sort of the, I can't believe we did it. Like, we're amazing. Sure. First time champion type team. And so that was all going on in the locker room. And I remember, so a couple of the bigger guys, like Kobe, spoke to the media, you know, in front of the podium, right? They bring him up there. But a lot of the other guys, for me, it was about, I'm in there with Ty Nowell and he had the camera. And we're going over to Shannon Brown, right, who didn't speak in that context. And we're going over to Adam Morrison and we're talking to Josh Powell. And so for me, it was a lot about talking to some of those role players after the podium thing and getting their experiences and their stories. And like Shannon Brown crying and then his mom coming into the locker room, you know. So that's what stood out to me about that. And also just, you know, getting champagne dumped on my head for the first time was interesting. It really does sting the eyes.
it's a sweet sting, I'm sure. And so So you guys wrap that up in the locker room and then you get on the bus to go back to kind of the homestead. Is that what happens after then?
Yes, exactly. So the locker room, and it takes longer than your typical locker room. So that probably took an hour plus of being in the locker room and just getting everything. And then it's like, all right, buses are going back to the hotel in 10 minutes. Yes, Riggs, you did this. Thank you. And so you get on the bus and I'm back to, at that point, trying to tie up the post-game story and making so on the bus, I'm still sort of like half working. And then at some point of the bus where I get that all done. And then we're all trying to figure out what's going to happen next. And I think it's either the group text or maybe it's even word of mouth at that point. Like, okay, boardroom X or boardroom A or whatever it was. And so basically go up to the room and I don't even think anybody changed. I think it was just drop the bag, go back down. They've got this huge spread of food. Obviously, there's champagne everywhere. There's beer everywhere. And that's when you start to see people filter in. And when Kobe enters the room, you get the ovation. Right.
Hey.
From the whole, like, and that was pretty awesome. Then and Powell comes in and you get the ovation. Right. And then, I mean, a couple guys probably got up and said something. I'm not going to lie. I mean, I did have a few beverages that night.
When did you let go, Mike? You sounds like you were like intensely in work mode.
Yeah.
At some point, you had to switch up.
In the boardroom, gotcha. We let go. And so one thing that I remember, and I have a photo of it. In fact, maybe I'll send it to Jeannie to tweet out with this, with the second part of this podcast link. But so Derek Fisher, I had alluded to earlier, hits the shot over Jameer Nelson. And so we're at this point now, everybody's drinking, everybody's having a great time. And we go over to, hold on, buddy. Yeah, we go over to this part of the room where guys are just taking pictures with everybody. And I'm like, hey, Fish. All right. So here's how we're going to set up this picture. Right. So you be you. I will be Jameer Nelson. OK. and so he literally holds his left hand up like the pose. And I just am like a late closeout. Like, what do you have over him? And so there's just a photo. And Ty is laughing in the background of the photo. I've got my hands up and Fish is holding his left hand up. So just like stuff like that, right? Little moments
please
from the game.
Please send us that photo. Yes.
Yeah. I'll send you that photo. It's on my Instagram at some point. If you don't want to go through the Twitter, you can search it. You'd have to go down probably for a while, but it's one of my favorite pictures. So stuff like that's happening. And then it's just, there's a picture of me with Lamar. There's a picture of me with Pau. It's stuff that I wouldn't happen now. Right now but since it was my first year and I wasn't doing TV or anything, I was only just like the .com guy, right? I was very much in the background. It was kind of like nobody really knew who I was, I don't think, other than some of the hardcore followers of the team. And so I was really able to kind of, and since it was in Orlando, like I mentioned, it didn't happen that same way the next year. Like I was not, it's Staples Center at the time. I was not involved in any of that. So that's something I think that I probably will never go through again, and I'll always have this incredible fondness and appreciation for just being able to be a part of it and being able to be a fly in the wall there and kind of celebrating with the Farmars and the Josh Powells, and then going over and essentially like saying thank you to the Powells and the Kobes and the Lamars for that experience that they delivered for everybody.
That was awesome, Mike. Thank you so much for sharing.
Well, there's one last part of it though, Pete.
Oh, please.
So the next morning, I had mentioned I don't drink a ton. I will drink, but I usually have like a couple beers, a couple of wines. Well, I get to here. Let me rephrase. I don't get really drunk often. And that night, you know, this combination of champagne and exhilaration and et cetera. And I wasn't the only one, but so there's a flight out of Orlando the next morning to get back to LA. And I wake up sort of in a panic. I finally hear my phone. Even though I had set the alarm, and there are like 14 missed calls from John Ireland, you know, like 100 texts from all these people, like, Trudell, bus is leaving. Like, let's go. And I'm like,
And that's the worst way to wake up too, right? Yes. Like that. Oh shit. Oh, what's going on? Oh, I gotta go.
And so nothing is packed, right? Then typically, like, I'll pack the night before, right? So I'll just, cause sometimes we used to more often leave early in mornings. Now we'll either leave a little bit later or we'll just actually go that night. And so I swear in about a minute and a half, throw my entire room into a big red suitcase. And start sprinting down the hall. And this is like a big resort. So, and I just full on sprint, not feeling the best, but sure. At the same time, high on life, right? Because of what happened last night. And now, had this somehow been like a serious loss, it would have been different. But so I'm sprinting out to the bus. I see Mitch Kupchak outside of the bus and he's on the phone and turned away from where I would be going. And I'm like, okay. So I sprint past, throw the suitcase into the luggage truck and get onto the bus to some mix of sort of jeers and ovation from everybody else. And again, the fact that they won, it's like everybody was in a pretty good mood. So
sure.
I will always remember the feeling of waking up and just because nobody wants to be that guy. And I have not been that guy since. I have never sort of like the last one to get on, or at least not often. And that's something that just crystallized the whole trip.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Mike. I can't wait to hear more of these. We'll be back tomorrow. But until then, you've been listening to Laker Film Room Podcast. We'll catch you guys next time.
Baines has got it in low to McHale. McHale wants to turn his double team. Just pass out of front, broken up by Worthy. Tip to Magic. Worthy dies on his belly. Magic scores.
And Magic got it. Magic fires. It's good. They will. Lakers win the game. The Lakers win the game. 3 seconds left. Van Exel to win it. It's on the way.
Kobe Bryant, 48 points, 16 rebounds. Shaq with his eighth block shot that ties an NBA Finals record.
A lot of Laker fans sticking around for this.
You're seeing something that's very rare indeed. A Laker to get MVP chance.
Right, in Boston.
In Boston.
Of all places.
Are you kidding me?
Kobe. Hard to believe.
Are you kidding me? Unreal! Are you kidding me?
Lakers looking to push. Bryant spinning in the lane. Back for Gasol. Pretty pass. And it's back to a three-point game.
Kobe Bryant picked up by Bell.
There's the move. Two, one.
Miss it!
Bryant! Unbelievable. It's over.
Shot clock now to five.
Bryant. Yes!
With a little tap to Alvin Gentry.
Add insult to injury, Kobe. I mean, what a shot. I mean, you can't defend that. Are you kidding me?
2.1 seconds remaining. Denver a foul to give. Jokic trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis, 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good! Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers! James again. Oh, he hits another one. LeBron James putting together a closing quarter against the Nuggets.
This historic 2020 NBA championship belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers conquer the bubble, and banner number 17 will soon hang in the rafters.